This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Hello and welcome to another instalment of our occasional podcast called I Wish I Hadn't. I'm Dave Hill.
And I'm John Wyatt. As you can tell from our names, David, Jonathan, we were born in the 1950s, so we've had many years to accumulate embarrassing moments which we now feel happy to share.
The dictionary defines regret as a sorrowful remembrance, a sense of loss. We're not in the business of sorrow and loss here. We're dealing with those things in life that we might wish had been otherwise, but which we're ne'er prepared to own up to. Well, it seems to have been a very long time since the two of us were together, or even on a Zoom call to discuss something else we wish we hadn't done. But various illnesses, time and time constraints and Christmas got in the way. But we're back again today. So morning, John.
Good morning, Dave, for our many, many fans. And today we are going to blush hot and cold, remembering moments when we drew attention to ourselves, but not in a good way. Yes, it is social embarrassment.
Ooh.
So here we go. I mean, probably the first social embarrassments we get are at school, aren't they? And I was thinking myself about names. You and I have middle names about which of us are particularly proud, are we?
No. They do tend to date us a little bit, don't they? What actual our middle names are. Yes.
But I can remember in class being asked, we had to give our full name. And I was embarrassed to reveal my middle name. So I actually got up from my desk, walked to the front and whispered it to the teacher. nobody else had to hear. But then, you know, you get over these things. These are minor things. It's not that I wish I didn't have my middle name. It's just that I wish I hadn't been embarrassed about it, I think.
Well, I remember on the same sort of thing. I remember when, I don't know if you remember this, but when we had French, and I know we were both in the same class for French, and the teacher said, you know, what's your name? And I thought, well, David's reasonably okay. And I thought, that's David in French. She was going to call us by French name, David. That's okay, you know. And then she said, well, of course, we've got another David in the class, so we'll have to use your second name. To which I said, oh, really? What is it? And I said, it's Geoffrey. So I remember she called me Geoffroy.
You should have said something like Flamand or Pierre. That was suitably French.
Marcel.
Marcel Hill, yes. That goes well, doesn't it? Yeah,
that brings it back. Yeah.
Yeah. I think another common cause of embarrassment is various forms of nudity in public, isn't it?
Mm.
And I can think of one when I went to stay with a friend and she said, let's go to the sauna that I go to. I was just for the weekend and I thought, well, I don't have any, you know, swimming costume. And she said, oh, so you can just wear your pants, you know, that'll be okay. I thought, well, that's all right, because saunas are dry, aren't they, you know?
Yes.
Be waterproof. So we went there. Of course, hadn't realized that the saunas are dry, but you sweat a lot. That's the first thing. And secondly, we also went in a steam room.
All right.
So that the boxers that I was wearing were sort of fairly pale color and soon became very saturated, upon which it became obvious that I had virtually translucent pants. So that everybody else in the sauna could see the whole deal. You know? I just had to sort of brave it out, really. He's all on display, but hey, you know, I'm cool with this. I might as well have gone in there with nothing on at all.
I mean, the only thing is, of course, for something like that, you're okay as long as there isn't suddenly a chorus of,
oh. Yeah. Oh, bless.
What a shame.
Yeah.
I was, I mean, things we wish we hadn't done. Well, still at school, of course, I did have the ignominy of, shall we say, as we called snogging, a girl at a party who was less than pleasing to the eye, but I thought it was like a bit any port in a storm, really. And I know you were there at the time, and I managed to intimately snog with this girl under a standard lamp, I seem to recall, which left nothing to the imagination, really.
Yeah, you should have had a bit more discretion. I mean, well, obviously, Dave, what we're going to hear now is what compounded the mistake, isn't it?
Yes.
Because a week later, there was another party.
There was indeed. And instead of thinking, oh, I've learnt from my mistake there, I went steaming straight in again with the same person. And leading to many, Mickey-taking comments from yourself and others.
Many others, yes, exactly. We didn't allow you to forget that in a hurry. I mean, it's a bit unfortunate for the girl, but I mean, she wasn't particularly, well, you know, I mean, boys are so kind of, you know, keen to rank their conquests, aren't they? You know, and it just was not considered a particular notch in your
memories. And I don't know if you know that, I can't remember if I told you this or not, or if I was too ashamed of it, the fact that, well, I used to stay at my grand's in Bedminster, and the girl got to know that I was staying there for overnight one weekend, I think it was, and came and knocked on the door and asked my gran if I was in, and I think I was cowering in the little kitchenette that she had in her flat at the time, thinking, oh God, please don't say I'm here.
Well, you see, for her, it was probably a social accomplishment, wasn't it, rather than an embarrassment.
What can I say? What can I say?
He probably thought, I've pulled a star here. She probably had got a lot of credit with her friends.
Oh, yeah. I do. I mean, I remember, fairly socially embarrassing, many years later, having a girlfriend in when I'd moved to the Midlands, and I decided that this wasn't working, this relationship at all. And I was keen to finish it, but very sort of cowardly about these things. And finally plucked up the courage on one Saturday evening to finish it. And I was, as I lived in at the time, and it was sort of, I suppose, about sort of 9:30-ish, 9:45 on the Saturday night. And I managed to sort of do the evil deed and finish with this young lady, and then insisted on, you know, getting a taxi for her to take her home. I don't think I was driving at the time, and was very keen to get the taxi as soon as possible, because I knew that Match of the Day was about to start, and I was quite keen to watch it. And I always felt very embarrassed about that. It was like, you know, tears didn't mean a lot. It was like, yes, that's that. I'm ever so sorry about that. But looking at my watch almost to say, you know, yes, come on, off you go then.
Did it work? Did you get rid of her?
I did, yeah. And I remember that Match of the Day was quite a good one as well.
Yeah. Well, maybe she wanted to watch Match of the Day as well. Who knows? I mean, you might, you know, she probably wanted to get home. I mean, the only sort of dating embarrassment I've had in that way was actually turning down somebody, which was sort of cringe making. It's somebody asked a woman asked me out and really didn't fancy her. So it's trying to think of an excuse kind of on the hoof, though, of why you didn't want to go out with somebody. That's not easy, is it, really?
No, the story
that I think that all my family love is a story that that I would always tell if I was in the red chair on Graham Norton. And when I went to a party in a large kind of room, a large sort of hall, and it was a table in the middle with all the food and drink on it, and all the seats were arranged around the outside of the walls in little tables, you know. So everybody kind of sat down. There was nobody in the middle of the room. And every time anybody got up to go and get anything to eat, it was the only thing happening. So everybody's attention immediately went to them. I thought, well, I'm quite hungry, so I'll go up to the table. And I got a plate and picked out some, you know, cocktails, sausages, crisps and things. And there was a little bowl of something that they look like sort of raisins or something or other, than they seem to be a bit. So I took a handful and popped them into my mouth just to see what they were. And as I did that, I realized while everybody watched me that I'd put into my mouth other people's discarded olive stones.
Oh God.
Whereupon I had to sort of spit them out into my hand, put them back, and then retreat hurriedly to my corner, dark corner. You know,
did you manage to retreat sort of nonchalantly? It was like, oh my God.
Lacking in nonchalance, complete.
Yeah. I mean, I know one of my wish I hadn't was certainly to sort of socially embarrass myself in front of a large audience. And basically with the show Return to the Forbidden Planet, which we were performing, and I had opened the show sort of thing, and there was various bits of dialogue. All one of those shows where I never completely understood what I was saying, because it's all written, it's all very Shakespearean. It's based on The Tempest, but uses bits from other Shakespearean plays, and so it doesn't always make sense. And I got confused at one point, and I'd sort of done my opening bit of speech, and then I was supposed to give a cue line for the opening chorus number, where 40 people were waiting in the wings and up the aisles of the theatre to come down. And I managed instead to skip over that cue line onto the cue line for the next song, which was a duet between me and someone else. And so I sort of blithely went on with this, and then we had to launch into this number, and the orchestra obviously feverishly finding their part for the next song. All the time, and as I was starting it, you know, I was aware of some movement inside of me and in the auditorium, and that was the chorus members sheepishly disappearing back upstairs and into the wings, because they weren't going to do their opening big chorus number. It didn't dawn on me that it was anything to do with me at the time, apart from I thought it was a bit strange what was going on. And I went off stage, went to the dressing room, and basically looked at my script, and I was saying to someone at the time, I said, you know, it didn't feel right. It felt like someone had really cocked up there. I think it might have been so-and-so was up on the bridge, because I looked at the script, and that cold sweat came over me when I realised it was me. I'd absolutely cut out the opening number of the show, totally. Which
made even less sense then.
Completely. In fact, what was actually said amongst the people who were there was that in that particular Return to the Forbidden Planet, the spaceship, which it's set on, didn't actually take off, because the number, which was Wipeout, was about the spaceship taking off and going off to cruise the galaxy. So it actually never left, basically, for that performance. So there you go.
Did you get a lot of, back chat from the rest of the cast?
Most of the cast laughed about it, but I remember the director's face was absolute thunder. Didn't actually have a go at me, but it was almost like they couldn't believe what I'd done to this, carefully rehearsed opening number.
Yeah. Oh, what a shame, Dave.
But gone.
Isn't it funny how you remember things that you know happened years and years ago, and they still make you feel embarrassed?
Oh, totally. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm thinking I had a hitching holiday round Cornwall with Robin. Remember Robin? And we were hitching.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
I had a lift for ages. We were walking along, and, you know, every time a car came past, you put your thumb out. And we just got so fed up. I said to Robin, well, when the next car comes around, let's not put our thumbs out. Let's just give it a really good V sign. So the car came past, and we both, you know, did energetic V signs, just because we were fed up, and then sort of carried on. 5 minutes later, of course, back in the other direction came the car that had passed us.
Yeah.
Slowed down, and a very angry man opened his window, and, you know, and got really, really, we of course pretended ignorance and said, I don't, you know, we were waving or something like that.
Waving.
and it's funny, isn't it? You know, because we knew we'd done the wrong thing. We tried to, and I can still remember that from, you know, probably, you know, 50 odd years ago, and feeling really, really embarrassed now, because it was just such a stupid thing to do.
Yeah.
I wish I hadn't thought of doing that, but there you go.
Yeah. It's, well, I mean, because my other, you know, as I always bring the odd musical theatre, which I hadn't, and being socially embarrassed in. My other tale is of being one of the two gondoliers in Gilbert and Sullivan's Gondoliers, and the song that opens Act Two is "Take a Pair of Sparkling Eyes," very famous song, sung by many famous tenors in the past, and, you know, well known to people, and always slightly. Not slightly out of my range, but at the top of it, at the very top of it. And always a bit of a sort of a, oh, God, I hope I can get those notes for this one, because it could be a little bit, you know, high. And on the one night, I think it might have been the Friday night, it opened, the music started, and I started to sing. And I was going through this whole first verse thinking, my voice must have really warmed up during the week, because it feels far more comfortable than it has for the rest of the week. And I thought, that's sounding really good. So then it got to the bit where I stopped singing, and the orchestra carried on to do the next, the bridge into the next verse. And it dawned on me that I treated the audience to a song that I was singing in a completely different key to the orchestra. It must have been absolutely excruciating for anybody to listen to, but I didn't know at the time. And luckily, I mean, I was able then to pick it up and sing the next verse, the second verse, in the right key. But those people must have thought to themselves, who on earth is this appalling, out-of-key singer that can't sing it?
But it couldn't have been as bad as the story that we both shared in oral, you know, when, you know, we were listening to the terrible singing, the warbling singing in the Lyric Theatre.
it was probably quite on a par, because this would have actually hurt people's ears, I think, you know, to the complete discord between what I was doing and what the band were doing at the time. So, yeah, it was not a good memory. That's one that does, again, bring me out in a bit of a cold sweat. I think, I can't believe I did that. Yeah.
No, I've got another embarrassing one, actually, involving nudity. With when I woke up one morning in my sort of 20s and got out of bed, went downstairs to make a cup of tea, not wearing anything, as I didn't in those days. Came back up the stairs with my cup of tea, in my hand and one for Jackie, and met on the stairs my mother-in-law coming down. Because I had two cups of tea in my hands, I couldn't actually do anything to cover myself. And if you meet anybody naked, it's probably not your mother-in-law, is it, really?
No, absolutely not. No, no, definitely not.
I had to assume nonchalance and just carry on up the stairs with my cup of tea. And she, you know, in her own polite way, didn't actually make any mention of it. But yeah, I still blush with that one, really.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, yeah, yeah, yeah. I know, you know, I think you know, so far we've avoided the socially embarrassing bathroom stories of things that we've maybe left in bathrooms and then had to try and I suppose make it, not even make excuses for, but ignore, so that people think maybe it wasn't that person that's responsible at all.
No. No. The one that won't go round the bend, you know, even though you poke it with the loo brush and it won't break up. There's just a monster left behind.
Absolutely, yeah. It's sort of lying there smiling at you as if to say, no, I'm not going anywhere. No, 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 no. And of course, if it's if you've been in and left something like that, but also the aroma that goes with it, and yes, you know that there's someone waiting to go in the bathroom after you. Just how long do you leave it before you leave the bathroom? How long can you sort of eke out that oh well, that person's in there now, washing their hands and dressing themselves, etc., you know, before you come out and say, well, you know, I'll give it a minute or two, sort of thing.
Yeah, I haven't actually had that happen to me. I remember being at a wedding when I was waiting to go into the loo, and whoever was in there was taking a long time. So I sort of knocked on the door politely and nothing happened. And I sort of then sort of hammered on the door. I said, you know, are you okay in there? Have you had a stroke? Eventually the door opened and out came a severely handicapped person. So, I mean, there was quite a long queue, but oh my God. I mean, I didn't really want to be there at that time. I'm quite embarrassed about that, I must say.
That's the ideal, yes, ideally socially embarrassed, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, with the bathroom as well, of course, there's the, you know, being both of us being of the male persuasion, you know, you do have the odd time where you've been in for a quick relief for yourself, and then you realise that you're wearing light coloured trousers and you have trouser tracks down them, as we say, you know. And yes. My one of my friends always used to say, well, he said, I always get over that. He said, basically, if I realise I've got trouser tracks, there's a group of people outside, I don't want them to see them, I will then purposely splash a load of water from the tap onto my trousers and then go out saying, oh, God, that tap, oh, it's so powerful. Look at what it's done to me.
Yes. A good answer, yeah. Well, I've never actually had that happen, luckily, but I'll remember that in case it happens.
Yeah, if you do, yeah.
So there's plenty really in our life that, that you know, has caused us some embarrassment, really.
Yeah. I mean, there's... Of course, the famous one, and I think a lot of us have done it, is meeting someone, a lady who is large in the stomach area, and saying the immortal phrase, "So when's it due?" And being greeted with, "When's what due?"
Oh God! Dang. You haven't done that, have you?
A friend of mine did it to my ex-sister-in-law, and not only said it, but then compounded it by continuing the conversation and saying, but surely, no, come on, don't be silly. Of course you must be expecting a baby. To which she more and more angrily said, no, I am not expecting a baby. Oh, but surely you must be. And I was actually standing at the side at the time and feeling exceptionally embarrassed because it wasn't something I'd done, but I just wish I wasn't there at the time. Really didn't want to be there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a polite knock at the door, Dave, and it is the genie.
Oh, can I, just before the genie comes, can I just tell you one more thing that I wish I hadn't done?
So you've got I'll another take you,
I'll take you, yeah, I'll take you back to a New Year's Eve, probably about 25, or what, let's see. No, it would have been 1996, New Year's Eve 1996. That's significant. A group of us had gone to for a New Year's Eve meal at a restaurant in Birmingham, and there was a lot of wine was drunk, and in fact I got to the point where I was ridiculously going around tables and finishing off wine that wasn't mine because I was so drunk I didn't care. And was exceptionally drunk. Now, at a table not very far away from us was someone who now, of course, exceptionally famous, was Gareth Southgate.
Right.
And it was 1996, and Gareth Southgate was famous, obviously not then for being the England football manager, but actually famous for missing the penalty in the Euro 96 tournament that put England out of the tournament. And obviously, you know, those of us who were there, deferential at the beginning. But once I'd had a few drinks and other people had a few drinks, we started to get a little bit silly, shall we say, knowing it was Gareth Southgate. And we were doing things like throwing bits of bread roll towards him and saying, "Oh, careful, Gareth, don't miss it, will you?" And things like that, you know, which I'm sure he found exceptionally amusing at that time. And I it embarrasses me so much that we thought it was hilarious. He'd come out for a nice meal on New Year's Eve, somewhere he wouldn't be recognised as much by people, and there he was with weeks having
Very nice man, isn't he? I mean, you know, he's a very decent man. I thought what you were going to say was that you were going around minesweeping and you picked up his drink and said, "It's okay, Gareth, you're not going to miss this." Poor Gareth.
If only I'd thought of that at the time. We thought we were just being hilarious with throwing things towards him and don't miss it and stuff like that. But
that's what drinking is to you, isn't it? Yeah.
So I'm sure when he thinks back to Euro 96 and all that stuff that happened to him, I'm sure there's a little bit of his mind that thinks, and then those bastards threw bread rolls at me on New Year's Eve.
I hate that David Hill. Yeah,
absolutely.
He's never got over it, poor man. Okay, so now I think the genie is going to make an entrance and he's going to say to you, Dave, which memories from your past do you want to erase so that it doesn't cause you any embarrassment any longer?
Well, I think because, to be honest, because I've thought about it and it still comes out as a story for me, the singing and treating an audience to what would have been ear-splitting cacophony as I was singing it because it was so much in the wrong key, I think the genie could help to, should we say, retune, auto-tune my voice for the first verse of "Take a Pair of Sparkling Eyes," just to make it blend in with the orchestra that was playing a little bit more. And I think it might have, saved 400 people from thinking, "Oh my God, have I got to sit through this for a long time?"
The genie says it's done, it's gone. You know,
fantastic.
You were a star, and everybody burst into applause after the first verse. For me, I think you know, I would be tempted to claim the olive stones in the mouth, but that's still quite an amusing story. So I think actually, funnily enough for me, I would choose the giving the V sign to the motorist with Robin because. It was so long ago, and I've never really got over the embarrassment of doing something stupid and irresponsible, making the man turn round because he was, you know, annoyed and feeling like a little boy because I was being told off by the stranger for doing something irresponsible. And I just like that kind of embarrassment to be removed from, really.
I think it's great that, I mean, these things that are socially embarrassing to us, you actually work out how long ago they were, and they still make you think, "Oh my God, I can't believe I did that."
I know. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it, really, how they stay with you. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's been a while since we've done one, and we're going to make sure that we're going to get back on the horse now, I hope, and produce some more. So, we'll wait and see what happens next time. We've got some ideas under consideration, and hope to produce another I Wish I Hadn't in the not-too-distant future.
Absolutely, absolutely. I will now, we'll leave it at that, and thank the genie once again for his stroke her benevolence, and we'll hopefully speak to people again in the near future.
Yep.